everyone, and welcome to the Retro Raw Rundown. This is our final podcast before old Saint Nick comes down your chimney and gives you chocolate and other stuff that when he didn't really get you the thing that you wanted.
Which unless is he like, just gets stuck and dies, like in Gremlins.
Yeah, there's that too. There is that option. But yeah, we're here to talk about Raw from December 23rd, 1996. Raw episode 190. Sandra, this marks the 3 month to the day that we began the Retro Raw Rundown. So before we begin the show, tell us about your experience so far for the last 3 months of 1996 Raw.
I mean, I didn't expect the Retro Raw Rundown to become one of my favorite things of the week. I really didn't. I thought, oh, this will be interesting. This will be an interesting experiment going back and watching things from 1996. I mean, I almost kind of refused to do it out of spite because I was at the time that we decided to start doing this. I was kind of being hounded on Twitter by people who were like, you need to learn wrestling history and you're not valid as a fan because you don't know everything from the 90s and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, I don't think I should have to know everything from the 90s to enjoy wrestling nowadays. Thank you very much. But at the same time, I really like wrestling, and I actually do like learning about the history of wrestling. I just don't have time, right? So we added another show to Inside the Ropes, and we've been doing the Retro Raw Rundown. I did not expect to fall this in love with 1996. Particularly, I did not expect to fall this in love with Psycho Sid. I get mocked on a daily basis now by my husband, who's just like, I can't believe you like Psycho Sid. Like, what even is going on? And I'm like, I can't explain it. He's just incredible, right? And there are so many colors and shiny things. And Vince McMahon on commentary is just so atrocious and weird. 1996 seems like it was basically kind of made for me. I'm a little sad that we're going to be moving into the Attitude Era when everyone thinks stuff was good, because we're not going to have things like The Goon and, you know, I mean, The Stalker. I fell in love. I got my heart broken. It's been a whirlwind, Kenny. It's just been a whirlwind.
Yep, it has been, but there's a lot more to come. And it's funny because it's now got to a point where people keep saying to me, like, I can't wait to see what Sandra's going to think of this thing or that thing or whatever.
People it just tweet gets me sometimes and be like, I don't want to spoil anything, but I really can't wait to see what you think of this. And I mean, I feel like sometimes we get more reaction to Retro Raw than we do Raw or SmackDown.
Yeah, we do. Fuck it. You get a reaction. That's all that matters. Let's talk about this. So it's the December 23rd, 1996 Raw. Now let's just get it out of the way. There's no intro again.
Boo. You told me the intros were coming back.
They are coming back, just not right away, but they will be back.
It feels like it's been a very long time. It's been over a month. I mean, other than the pay-per-view had an intro, but it's been over a month.
It's basically been two rounds of tapings.
Yes.
The tapings from the night after Survivor Series, the tapings from the night after In Your House at its time. But we kick off the show, Sandra, with a WWF Intercontinental Championship match.
Yes, we do indeed. Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Wildman Mark Mero. Accompanied by Sable, who really should have worn this outfit for Karate Fighters.
She did.
No, she didn't.
She's in the same leather thing she wore last week.
It is not the same leather thing as she wore last week, Kenny. Last week.
Are you sure? Because he's wearing the exact same gear that he wore last week.
Yes, because his gear matches belt her. Her top is different.
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, to me, it looked like the same gear.
It was not the same gear. She didn't have the gauntlet. She didn't have the gauntlet things that I said might have gotten in her way with Karate Fighters. Also, this was a halter top. This was not the strapless deal she was wearing last week, where she had to hold herself to run away. Because this is something that her boobs wouldn't have fallen out of to run away, because it's really high up on the neck. I'm familiar with boobs and keeping them in shirts, and this would have been way more convenient for her.
I've never claimed you're not familiar with boobs, Sandra. That's never an accusation. I've pointed a lot of accusations your way. That's not one of them. But we kick off with this. So going into this, you know, how do you feel about the Wildman Mark Mero and his attempt to be regaining the championship? Is he a character that you're behind? Is he a character that you want to see become the champion again?
No, he seems like a sweet simpleton who tries, but just isn't very interesting.
Do you like his theme music?
His theme music is fine. I like the fireworks. I like the pyro that he has. I think that's pretty fun.
Do you, like, there are some people who've said this before, I mean, do you think it's fair when people say they, like, Vince McMahon apparently did not realize that he was Caucasian?
See, we had that discussion before. It's really interesting. It just never occurred to me that that could even be a thing.
Because, like, he does look a little bit like Little Richard.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I never would have looked at Wild Man Mark Mirro and thought that is a black man. But I find it really interesting that a lot of people apparently did.
The 90s. So we get the Wild Man Mark Mirro against Hunter Hearst Helmsley for the Intercontinental Championship. Now, the rules were that Hunter could lose the belt via DQ or countout, so he had to win the match. And at one point, Mark Mirro just decides to just go after Jerry the King Lawler. And Jerry Lawler, I mean, for all the shit that you can say about Jerry Lawler, does any heel run away better than him?
I'm not so sure. I mean, he does run away like a smarmy prick. Well, I mean, the thing is, this is all coming off of the Karate Fighters finale last week, right? So they did show footage of the Karate Fighters, and, you know, Vince McMahon's like, fireworks are going off just like they're likely to go off, or they did when Jerry the King Lawler was defeated by Sable. And Jerry is just brooding at ringside before this match even starts. He has the most petulant child temper tantrum face. Like, he has been bawling his eyes out and screaming, going, "I lost it," and now he's tired himself out and is just pouty because he just can't even be bothered to make noise anymore, right? And they, I mean, they showed Goldust coming to save Mark Mirro and all that kind of stuff. So we're coming off of that. So Mark Mirro, yeah, apparently just doesn't like Lawler. I don't know. The match itself, with the whole stipulation of you can lose the title via DQ or count out, it was interesting. I kind of wish they would have done more with it. There was one point where I think Hunter Hearst Helmsley grabs a chair, a padded chair. This was even more padded than that red padded chair. This was like just a mound of cushion that he would have been attacking Mark Mirro with. It might have been comfy, right? Like, it looked like it just could have been nice. But he ends up not hitting Mark Mirro because he's like, I don't want to lose the title. So, I mean, that was good. But
it doesn't really make a lot of sense that, like I get that Mark Mirro is annoyed about the Karate Fighters tournament, but the guy to be angry at is Hunter Hearst Helmsley. The aim of the situation is to be the IC champ, and it felt like he just took his finger off the button a bit too many times. And
Mark Mirro just never seems very smart.
No, he does not. And then, like, the great thing is, like, so Goldust and Marlena come into the crowd to go and sit again at that really random point in the crowd.
They got the same seats Ahmed Johnson did.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how in this arena, the completely different arena, different city than before, they managed to find the exact same seats that look exactly the same. And then there's this great bit where, like, as Goldust and Marlena are, like, walking down, you can just see the security guard who's, like, getting them to their seats, like, screaming at people, "Move! Yeah. Move! Move!" It was excellent. It was a highlight for me.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I liked their gold spotlight. I would have been a little annoyed, like, because Marlena has her cigar and everything. I would have been a little annoyed sitting in the crowd right behind him.
I'm surprised nobody tried to pull Goldust's wig off, to be honest.
That's true. He kept it on the whole time.
But the thing that was interesting here is that, you know, Triple H manages to beat Hunter Hearst Helmsley with his own mind. No, he manages to beat
he is the cerebral assassin, after all.
Oh, don't buy into his shite, Sandra. He stalled the WWE Universal title picture for the last 4 months.
Oh, I'm well aware.
We're all waiting for him to come back so storylines can progress.
When is football done?
Exactly. You don't follow that kind of backstage shit, and even you know that football thing.
Because everybody talks about it, and, like, I barely ever even know when football is happening, and I live in America, but, ugh.
Yeah, you only, like, pseudo-live in America, though. You don't really. But Triple H manages to win the match clean. You know, like, Wildman goes up top, and it doesn't pay off for him, and Triple H pedigrees him, and that's it. What did you think about the idea of, you know, because they had kind of built up for the last little while that, like, Mirro is going to get a chance to regain the title. He has the title match at its time. He's unsuccessful, but he's kind of got the out of gold dust. Now he's finally got his title match, and he doesn't get it done.
He doesn't get it done. I mean, it's kind of weird because on the first episode of Retro Raw that we watched, Mark Miro won the Intercontinental Championship and there was the big celebration with all the people who looked kind of bored backstage but were supposed to be celebrating, right? And since then, Mark Miro just hasn't seemed that interesting or important. Even when he was the champion, he didn't seem like that big of a deal, I guess. And sometimes it's hard for me to tell who was a big deal and who wasn't a big deal because I'm not... Like, I'm still fairly new to 1996 world. It's only been a few months, right? So Mark Miro seems like some kind of guy who I kind of want to just pat him on the head and be like, good try. But no, also. I'm not sure. Like, he doesn't really click for me. And the whole Sable thing, it seems like Sable's already become a lot more popular than him. And so I think... she might be the only reason that people really care about him at this point. And they clearly want to keep her around. I mean, they gave her the big Karate Fighters win. That's a big deal. I have to wonder if Mr. Perfect changed the outcome of the Karate Fighters tournament. I have my suspicions about that. But, well...
I love the idea that, like, you know, we're in 2016 and... I feel like nobody from 1996 to now has taken the Karate Fighters tournament more seriously than you.
It's a like, very big part of my life.
To the point where, like, I feel like you're going to just mention it every week, just at various points, to keep it in the ether.
I'm really sad that it's done. Like, I'm really sad that it's done. It was a very big and important part of my life for a couple months, and it was just so enjoyable. And they did show footage of it here on this episode, so I'm not just bringing it up for no reason at this point, mm-hmm. because some of the Karate mm-hmm. Fighter stuff actually mm-hmm. is relevant to this match. But I mean, Mark Miro, I'm trying to put my finger on what it is about Mark Miro that doesn't click with me, and I think he might just be like a shittier Apollo Crews.
Yeah, you could be right. I think the thing that's interesting is that, you know, very clearly Mark Miro is on the way out now of this storyline, not of the company. But he, you know, you're not an idiot. You can see this.
The storyline is done with Mark Miro and the Intercontinental Championship. I mean, the storyline is now Goldust and Triple H.
Yeah, so Mark Miro is being kind of phased out of this. What was interesting to me was when Mark Miro came out to the ring. I don't know why I watched this time in particular, but I watched Sable as she came out with him. And I think this is the beginning of Sable. Like, she used to come out and be all about Mark Miro.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was, and I feel it almost her winning the Karate Fighters thing. Like, she's developed a bit of I'm a star now. Because if you watch her, when she comes out and Mark Miro is in the ring, she's doing her own posing. It's not about Mark Miro anymore. It's about I'm Sable.
Well, even in the past couple months, her outfits have changed drastically. Because when we started Retro Raw, she was wearing evening gowns and she was very elegant. And now, I mean, she's just pure sex.
Yeah, and I'm not saying a woman can't rock leather. You should be able to rock whatever you want.
Absolutely. I'm not even saying it as a negative thing. I'm just saying that there
maybe
has
not
definitely
a good manager.
Been... well, yeah. I mean, there's definitely been a change to how she is presented.
For sure. And then we've got Triple H and Goldust. That's going to be the next rivalry leading us into the new year. You know, last week we talked about the... Well, you are, aren't you? You're queer. No. Yay! And all that sort of stuff. So
yay, now... you don't sleep with men. You can be our hero.
So Goldust is now the babyface. He is with Marlena. They are now an item. So it feels like we've broken the fourth wall of, like, they're actually a couple. And Goldust is raging that Triple H tried to hit on Marlena. And then Triple H gets in the mic and basically, like, in his weird posh voice says, I guess it's me and you at the Royal Rumble. And at the Rumble, I'm going to show you what it's... I'm going to show you what it's like to be a real man. And Marlena, you're going to find out what it's like to be with a real man.
Sandra, it wasn't quite like that. It was, I guess this means it's you and me at the Royal Rumble. Well, at the Rumble, I'm going to show you what it's like to be a real man. And Marlena, you surely are going to find out what it's like to be with a real man. I mean, could he say real man in, like, any more effeminate way.
Which is ironic given the storyline.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this, I feel like this storyline was just made for you. Really?
Yeah.
I know I say this sometimes to, but like, I mean, we are in 1996 where there was not in anywhere on entertainment sort of a positive representation of gay people, really, at that point, I don't think.
When was it on Friends? When did Ross's ex-wife come out as gay? Because that's like the first gay character that I remember on television. And that had to be around this time, because I think it was right around the time of the Olympics. And the Olympics were 96.
I think it would have been like series two of Friends, which would have been 1996. But like, and even then, for a while, lesbianism was like more okay than gay.
Well,
gay
and
guys.
I wasn't even allowed to watch Friends because of that. So.
Wow. Jeez.
I told you my upbringing was strict.
I just didn't realize it was that strict.
Oh, yeah. So I wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons, Kenny.
This all explains so much. But. Well, so I mean, at this point, there clearly wasn't any sort of positive representation of gay people. So it's difficult to watch this back now with where things have gone to 2016 and judge it as a 1996 thing. It's very difficult to do.
I can't judge it from 1996 view, because I can't. Like, I can only judge it with how I see the world right now, which is interesting. Like, you watched it at the time, so what was going through your mind as all of this was going on?
I mean, I was, like, 11, so, like, as weird as it sounds, like, you didn't really, like, you weren't really exposed to any gay people anywhere. So, like, even... like, I don't think I probably fully understood what was going on, really.
Right.
Like, I think I was just like, oh, well, Hunter's trying to, you know, take Goldust's lady away from him. So Goldust is going to beat him up. And then, like, when you're like 11, you're kind of like the little sheep, you know, you kind of go, he's a good guy now, so I'm going to cheat him. You know, you don't really think of it much more complicated. I do remember being quite a fan of Goldust around the sort of early 97 kind of time period, because he just seemed to have a little bit more realism and fire behind him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he seemed to be more... it was more believable that he was with Marlena because they were married. So he was giving you an extension of his life. But yeah, it's just... it's very odd to watch. But at least... I mean... It's not the best that, like, Goldust becomes a hero because he sleeps with women, but at least Jerry Lawler's meant to be the heel.
That's true.
There's that.
That's true. And Triple H trying to, you know, sleep with Marlena and then insisting on it. Like, that's another issue, right? I mean, he's the villain. So this seems more like the Noam Dar situation, like, where Triple H is like, oh, yeah, well, I'm gonna get Marlena from you or something. And Marlena is just kind of the prize to be won again, which is such a trope, which is why it bugs me. But I mean, can I just also say that Goldust being with Marlena doesn't make him not queer? I mean, he said he wasn't, but...
he could be lying.
He could be lying.
He could be bisexual. There's various...
Like, that's a thing. That's a real thing. So, like, just, hey, look, I'm with a lady. That doesn't... yeah. But it's just... has there ever been a story that's... well, I mean, Enzo and Cass is probably less for me than this because of the roles. But this is one of those stories where, like... this is just so not for me
mm-hmm.
at all. And so it's frustrating, because would I like to cheer Goldust? Yeah, I guess, because he's the good guy. And I mean, Hunter Hearst Helmsley is a despicable human. We know that already. So I definitely want to boo him. But the whole, I'm not gay, so you could cheer me now. Like, that really sticks in my craw. I don't like it at all. And...
well, I mean, nor is MD expecting us to... I don't think MD would expect us to be like, oh, thank fuck he's not queer, because, I mean, I couldn't cheat him then.
Right, exactly.
Which, to be... the funny thing is, actually, if any character could be gay in a babyface, it's Goldust.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, much better than Darren Young, who, like, his whole personality seems to be he is gay, and that's it. Nothing else. Like, there was a documentary not too long ago, about a year ago, maybe, And it was it was like a documentary following Darren Young around. And he's the dullest man alive.
Oh, yeah.
So dull. Anyway.
But it's Vince the whole time was just interesting, too, because he's like, we don't know who or what Goldust is, but we know exactly who or what he is not. He made that very clear. So just like hammering that point home.
I do want to bring up Mel, one of our loyal listeners and pledgers, because she brought up a great point, which I never thought of. And I think it's probably the best point. And Mel, I spoke to my good friend Jamie Miller, who I used to watch these Monday Night Raw era shows with. And I asked him, you know, was there anything that took him out of the moment of when Billy Gunn's wife came in to check on him? And Jamie just couldn't. He was like, no, there's nothing. And I was the same. But Mel has figured it out, ladies and gentlemen. Do you know what it is before I say it?
I do, because I saw it on Twitter, and she's really smart. And yeah, I wouldn't have caught it, but also I wasn't really around for that story.
Yeah, take the blame away from you. But like, so basically Billy Gunn is in the ring last week. He gets whiplash, and his wife comes in to help him. So I guess they're kind of trying to break the fourth wall of like his wife's coming in because it's so serious. But then, like, why was he fucking Sonny for, like, 6 months?
Right?
And chasing Sonny. Like, where was his wife then?
And, I mean, even in the 3 months that we have done Retro Raw, I mean, I wasn't around for most of the Smoking Guns. I only saw kind of, like, the end of the Smoking Guns. But Billy was still kind of infatuated with Sonny some. So it's something that I probably should have picked up on, but didn't.
Yeah, so we get some footage here, and we see a clip from Livewire where Bart Gunn was on the phone saying he's upset and he wished it didn't happen. He's been trying to apologize. Now, luckily, ladies and gentlemen, we are not going to have to watch Billy and Bart at the Royal Rumble in a one-on-one match. So don't worry. The story does not continue.
Does he get over his partial temporary paralysis by then?
Well, I couldn't possibly divulge that information.
I mean, just what kind of a diagnosis is that to say? Partial temporary paralysis.
Like, well, because it's not complete paralysis, and it's not permanent paralysis.
Right. You know,
he could have had complete permanent paralysis, but he had partial temporary paralysis. It's very simple, Sandra. It's a medical term.
Okay. Why? Wow. Medicine.
But then we get...
Also, does Bart Gunn not sound like the most boring individual alive?
He does. Even the picture of him on the Livewire graphic was dull.
Like, I don't know enough about Bart Gunn because, again, I just know him as the Brawl for All guy. But he does not seem very interesting. Out of the Smoking Guns, I definitely prefer Billy.
Yeah, Billy is definitely the more interesting one. But we do get Sunny, and she's got a Christmas thing on.
Yes, she does.
She's all happy, and she's... And, you know, Vince is obviously, you know, jizzing in his pants at the idea Sonny's going to come sit beside him.
On Donner, on Blitzen, the blinking and the twinking. Like, what are you even saying?
And Sonny's like, man. You know, and, you know, Vince is wondering, you know, as Rocky Maivia is coming out, like, why are you here, Sonny? And she's like, maybe it's just to sit next to you and wish you a Merry Christmas. And JR's just like, oh, my God.
He rolls his eyes in the best way. Like, if I... could easily make gifs without it taking any effort, I would absolutely make a gif of that because it was great. And they're like, what's your problem, JR? Da, 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 da. And he's just like, what the fuck?
I feel like
here?
Retro Raw is going to make you enjoy JR more because, like, your whole period of being a fan and having JR around, you weren't really getting the classic JR. You were getting kind of, you know, now and then the odd thing, but nothing special. So now you're going to get to see some of the actual things that make people love JR so much, yeah. AKA being hosted by Vince. But if last week was not enough, ladies and gentlemen, at the end of last week's Retro Raw Rundown, you did have the old Powerbomb Christmas Carol. But that was not all they had in store for Christmas, because Psycho Sid is coming to town.
I love that there's an entire Psycho Sid-themed Christmas album in this.
It's the best. So that, of course, ladies and gentlemen, will be played at the end of this podcast. Psycho Sid is coming to town. I wish I had the exact line. I think it was like a choke slam while you're sleeping, powerbomb when you're awake. No, it was like a clothesline while you're sleeping, a choke slam when you're awake, a power slam, a powerbomb whether you've been bad or good, so run for goodness sake.
Yeah, something like that. I can't remember exactly.
It's excellent. Rocky Maivia does face Salvatore Sincere, a rematch from the free-for-all for its time, which we didn't get to see. But we they're still, you know, obviously portraying Rocky Maivia as the kind of the young baby face that everybody sees something in. Jim Cornette's trying to sign Rocky Maivia. Sonny's obviously mad into him as well. Sonny's like Sonny's just all about getting
some
Rocky.
She's like this dreamy girl who has a crush on a boy or something. It seems very strange for Sonny.
Mm-hmm. But Sonny, like, what I like about Sonny is Sonny's consistent. You know, she's consistent in that she wants talent that are going to get her to the top.
Mm-hmm. She wants to manage champions.
She does. I feel like Rocky Maivia is, you know, like, I feel like he should never go out for a drink with Sonny. Because the way Sonny was talking about him here, I think he'd end up waking up in the hotel room with her, like, after copious amounts of alcohol.
Yeah. Like, talking about getting your claws into him and stuff. I mean, professionally, I'm a good girl.
No, she's not.
She keeps insisting that she's such a good girl. It's weird. I could have sworn we saw this match on Raw before, but I think I'm just mixing up jobbers. Who did we see Rocky Maivia fight before?
Who did we see him fight before?
Because I could have sworn... But I don't know. Like, and has Jim Cornette always been with Salvatore Sincere? Is this just something I've not noticed? Or is Jim Cornette only out here because he's trying to court Rocky Maivia, but he's also on Salvatore Sincere's side?
Kind the latter. He's basically just trying to get Rocky Maivia. So
everybody wants Rocky Maivia.
Everybody.
It's really, really interesting watching Retro Raw because of the obvious comparisons to one Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
And
although
it's making so much more sense, and it just kind of makes you wonder why they're continuing this experiment for so many years when they've done it before.
I do like here that they are playing, you know, Rocky Maivia is getting victories and managers are courting trying to get him. It's good.
Oh, yeah. No, that's awesome. I love that. It's just, I mean, could they be any more behind a guy?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, well, if you think that way now, wait till we get to the new year. George and Adam, Sandra.
We didn't mention, Sonny's going to have Psycho sit on Livewire, and I'm going to have to watch Livewire this week.
Well, the good thing is, like, if you watch Livewire, it's the last episode of Livewire that's in studio.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm. Because as soon as 1997 started, it became a recap show.
Oh.
This is the last Livewire coming up.
I'll have to commemorate the occasion.
What, with a beer?
Probably. How do I commemorate any occasion? I mean, sometimes it's wine.
Of course. Why not? But we've got George and Adam again. You've pretty much fallen in love with them.
Kind of, not in the way that I think you think. Like, I'm still very annoyed by them, but I kind of can't look away either. Like, why are you not in your seats? Now they're in the Alamo Dome tunnel, right? So they moved one seat forward last week for no reason. And then now they're out of their seats again to go into the tunnel so that they can do Psycho Sid's entrance, but they end up in the bathroom because Glasses Guy is an idiot.
George.
Sure.
It's not difficult. Like, you're the name Nazi here.
Oh, I'm intentionally not remembering their names.
Good. Don't you dare desecrate the name of George and Adam here. You're providing us with the entertainment. I'm just gutted we've not got them now, 20 years later at the Alamo Dome.
You know what? Wouldn't that be the most amazing reunion?
Yeah, because nobody would know what the fuck's going on, apart from all of us that watched this old stuff going, it's George and Adam!
I think it would be so... Well, I mean, that'd be kind of fitting for WWE, though, right? Like, hey, look at this awesome thing that you're totally going to remember and care about, and nobody does.
Oh, that's so good. But luckily, after George and Adam, we get our Lord and Savior, Psycho Sid. He is joining us live on Monday Night Raw. For an interview with Vince McMahon. Not an interview with Jim Ross this time. This time it's Vince hogging the glory. And it's very weird that Sid... So he comes out to his music, but the music doesn't stop.
No, it keeps... Well, I mean, this was a very special in-ring interview. It's funny because the caption for Retro Raw this week on the network says something about Psycho Sid conducting a special in-ring interview, something like that. And I was like, well, I feel like every Sid interview is quite special. So I'm really looking forward to a special in-ring interview, right? And maybe it's just special because his music kept going, so there was an ambiance of Sid.
There's an ambiance of Sid, for fuck's sake. there is, but it's, you know, still for fuck's sake. What's interesting here is that, you know, you've got the Undertaker, who's like the demon, right? Who, like, the Undertaker can legit... But he could legitimately become WWF champion at any point. He's that big of a name, and, you know, if he got the chance, he could potentially become champion. You've got Shawn Michaels, who's an utter cunt of a human, but he's a good wrestler, so he could get his belt back. Especially at the Royal Rumble, he might get his belt back in San Antonio. You've got Bret Hart, who is pissed at everybody for screwing him, so he could get the belt. So there's a lot of people trying to get Sid.
I mean, Steve Austin's still kind of out there.
Steve Austin's on the rise. You've got Vader, who's like an outsider as well. There's a lot of guys who could be vying for Sid. We've got Shawn Michaels watching this backstage. He looks as interested as he always is in being at Monday Night Raw.
He really doesn't want to be there.
Again, just wait till 1997. Just gets worse.
I hate him already so much. Like,
but, you know, now I was going to talk you through the Sid promo, ladies and gentlemen, but I feel like there's someone on this podcast who would rather describe to you what Sid says, because she, as always, has pretty much written down what Sid says. Sandra, what does Sid say here?
I forget
what
is that Sid's message? My notes in front of you this week so you can see all of this.
Yeah, I didn't have notes this week because I didn't have the time, so I just watched it. So I'm like, I've got Sandra's notes for clarification of the order of stuff. So I'm just sitting here and I'm like, going to go through Sid's promo, and I'm like, where is what he says, and where is the description? Oh, it's all exactly transcribed what he says. Okay.
So, all in capital letters.
Yeah. So what is Sid's message to the lovely people of Earth?
Well, I want you to think about something for a second. Within 30 days, I have defeated the two greatest technical wrestlers there ever were, but the game they played was technicality, and in the end, there was only power. And then he says something, right? And it's sort of unintelligible, and I didn't want to watch it five times. So, like, the end of the unintelligible bit, he's like, why? Why, psycho? Because I am the super predator of the World Wrestling Federation, and I am the master and the ruler of the world. I want everyone to realize one thing as I stand here right now. I am 6'9 and over 300 pounds. And tomorrow, I will be 6'9 and 300 pounds. And the day after. And the day after. Ha 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 ha. And the day after. I love Psycho Sid.
I mean, there's just no words. There's just no words. To all I want to see, and, you know, I'm going to warn you now, we don't get to see it, so don't get excited, but can you imagine the promo battle between Psycho Sid and Ahmed Johnson?
Oh my goodness, that would be incredible. I would love that so much. It would be just the best delight.
What I love about it is, like, see all this stuff that Sid says here in this whole promo, I believe every single word of him.
I think this promo is excellent. I actually do. I will defend Psycho Sid, because everybody says that Psycho Sid is the worst promo ever. And yeah, he says things like, make my conquer, and I have half the brain that you do, and all these Psycho Sid things that everybody knows. Well, no one knows make my conquer except me, because I love it. But like, he says a lot of ridiculous stuff. But sometimes his promos are genuinely good. And other than not being able to understand a few of his words here, the point of the promo is kind of great. It's interesting because as he's walking to the ring, even, I forget if it's Vince or JR, but one of them says he's not technically pure. I think it's Vince. That sounds like a Vince thing to say. But, you know, like, basically talking about how he's not a technical wrestler. He's not an amazing technician in the ring. We know this. Psycho Sid is a terrible wrestler, but in the end, there's only power. And these smaller guys that he's beaten, you know, he beat Shawn Michaels, he beat Bret Hart. He played, you know, they played the game of technicality. They were trying to be technical wrestlers up against this big brute monster power-er of a man, right? And they lost because he's like, no, in the end, there's only power. There's only me because I'm friggin' Psycho Sid. I'm 6'9", I'm over 300 pounds, and I'm going to go cackle about that for probably like a day because I'm insane. So I love this.
He's the best.
And it's a good story. Like, who's can Shawn Michaels overcome the power of Psycho Sid? He couldn't before. Bret Hart couldn't.
Now, I have a question for you, Sandra.
Yes.
When we begin 2017, we obviously want to give all the lovely listeners of Patreon, the lovely pledgers, their money's worth, right?
You're going to make me watch Shotgun Saturday Night, aren't you?
I think we should cover the debut of Shotgun Saturday Night. Are you game to cover the debut of Shotgun Saturday Night?
Sure.
Live in Manhattan on a Saturday night.
It's rockin', sexy, or raucous, sexy, live, a smokin', rockin', sexy good time, apparently. Now, I have heard of this, and I have heard this reviewed, and I don't remember the details, but, like, if I didn't know what this was, I would just assume that WWF is straight up doing porn. Wherever. And it's like porn outside. It's porn in different locations.
So again, this is another. So in 1996, WWF in the UK, they would air a show in the mornings, on Saturday mornings, called Blast Off, which was like an international syndicated recap show for Raw and stuff. So we never got Livewire at all in 1996.
You got Blast Off instead?
Yeah, the recap show. And we never got Shotgun Saturday Night until like April of 1997, and it only stays in New York live for like 8 weeks. And then they remember, oh, the idea of our crew having to work every Saturday night live in Manhattan is not logistically possible. So,
boy, you think?
But it is fun while it lasts. Now, with WWF going into the Alamo Dome for the Royal Rumble, they have tried to set an agreement with AAA to bring in some talent. So we see the debut in the WWF of Piroth and Cibernético against the New Rockers, because Marty Jannetty is back very, very briefly.
So he was gone, though?
He was gone, 100%. But I didn't even know he was back.
Because I was confused. When I saw the New Rockers, I was like, I thought Kenny told me Marty Jannetty was gone. Why are the New Rockers here? I thought someone else was going to be a rocker, but no, it was Marty Jannetty and his hair.
He was gone. I don't know why he's back.
I don't know either.
We've got Mil Máscaras on commentary. On the Spanish commentary, I should say, with Hugo Savinovich, Carlos Cabrera. There's a very funny moment with Mil Máscaras coming up in the Royal Rumble match, which I'm interested to see Sandra talk about. So how do you think that, because obviously Piroth and Cibernético win the match. It's a feature for the AAA guys. They don't want to have their guys not go over. They want to, you know, help this relationship. How do you think the Luchador guys came across on WWF TV for their first appearance?
I think they came across like, why are they here?
Mm-hmm.
And no one knows what to do with them. Because hearing Vince and JR try to explain Mexican culture and lucha style doesn't go very well.
No, it does not. It's weird. Because Vince McMahon has no idea about Mexican culture. Just look at the last 25 years of his television
show. Well, yeah. I mean, it makes absolute sense why they have no idea how to book luchadors now. Apparently, he hasn't learned anything in the past 20 years. Because, I mean, it's so weird, too, because they're like, and these men are not necessarily high-flying because they aren't, because that's a stereotype. And it's like they're trying to get across, like, don't stereotype Mexican wrestlers, everyone, which, I mean, is true. Like, not all luchadors are super high-flying. Lucha Libre is full of all sorts of different types of wrestlers. That's what makes it, you know, fun and a variety show and whatnot. But they're like, these two have a better ground game or something. And so they picked luchadors that aren't high-flying, even though, I mean, they do some high-flying moves, but as confused as I sound trying to explain how they explain these Mexican wrestlers, that's about how it comes across.
No, as you're absolutely right. I feel like Piroth and Cibernético are fine, but they are not the people that you would want to bring. Like, who it should have been is like La Parca.
Yeah.
Like, he would have been like great. And then JR interviewed Mil Máscaras. Mil Máscaras is officially, Sandra, entering himself into the Royal Rumble.
He is.
How
indeed.
Excited are you?
Sure. Yep. That's great.
But this is the beginning, I guess, of the AAA relationship, so
I find it kind of interesting that they have a AAA relationship in general, because it seems, I mean, looking at WWE now, we've just heard them start to reference other promotions, even in promos, or like even just acknowledging that other promotions exist in the past, what, year, maybe 2 years, but mostly in the last year is when we've actually heard them reference things like New Japan, or, you know, people can actually say the words Ring of Honor, or, you know, I mean, they obviously have a working relationship with Evolve right now. But so it's interesting because I just never expected it, I guess. I never expected them to acknowledge other promotions, even though I knew that they would acknowledge like WCW because they're in a war with them, and they acknowledged ECW some because of whatever was going on there. But I didn't expect AAA to just kind of pop up and be a thing. And I feel like it seems like it should be something that's really cool. Like, hey, we're promoting this partnership with AAA, and they're doing it in the most lackluster way possible.
Well, it's because they have no idea. Because at this point in time, obviously, WCW have got an agreement with New Japan, and they're bringing in Japanese guys, and the NWO's got a Japan part of the faction, because that's where it originally came from. So this is the beginning of like WWF working with other promotions for a little while, but it's all with the mindset of trying to do something different from WCW. So I guess we will continue to monitor the AAA influence on WWF television, which is minimal. We do get a vignette for the Royal Rumble, though, in the Alamo Dome. How excited are you on a scale of 1 to 10 for the 1997 Royal Rumble at the Alamo Dome? Have they got you in any way excited yet, or are you still kind of, I need more from you to get my excitement levels up?
I still need more to get my excitement levels up. I mean, this vignette telling me that Triple H, Flash Funk, British Bulldog, Ahmed Johnson, and The Undertaker are involved. Cool.
To be fair, if you told me those five were involved in the 2017 Royal Rumble, I'd probably be pretty excited. Well, I mean, you know, British Bulldog's dead, but, you know, if he was not dead.
Right.
The Honky Tonk Man has returned to the World Wrestling Federation, and he's here.
Honky Tonk Man. Here.
Any thoughts on the Honky Tonk Man?
Why is the Honky Tonk Man here? Like, okay, I do know where this leads, right? I do know where this leads. So I know why he's here. But if I didn't know where this led, and to be fair, knowing where this leads, why is he here?
Okay, what I love about it is like the idea that like maybe the Honky Tonk Man is going to end up in the Royal Rumble. Why? Like, why would that be like a, why would you advertise that as like a huge thing? He's the Honky Tonk Man.
And like, I don't really have that much frame of reference for the Honky Tonk Man. And
what a jumpsuit.
I mean, what a jumpsuit. I love the theme. I do. He's a Honky Tonk Man. Like, it's just a delight, right? Like, it's so catchy. Mm-hmm. It's no With My Baby Tonight, but I mean, Honky Tonk Man is.
Give it time.
Yeah. Well, Honky Tonk Man is basically here to say that he doesn't like either man in this match. With Razor Ramon versus Bret Hart?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Because he's here seeking new talent, he says. He's looking for someone who can do what the Honky Tonk Man used to do. But he doesn't think Razor Ramon or Bret Hart has what it takes. So, like, why are you out here now?
Well, I think he was just out to kind of... He's out to tell us that he wants to find someone who can sing the guitar and shake, rattle, and roll.
Apparently that's, well, why isn't he just looking to our good friend Jesse James?
Come on, Sondra.
I'm just saying.
Jesse James might be able to play guitar, but he absolutely cannot shake, rattle, and roll.
I mean,
that's
2 out of 3, though.
2 out of 3, but I think he's going to find someone who can do all three at some point in 1997. But we do get Bret Hart against Razor Ramon. Fake Razor Ramon for the main event. What's interesting here is that it takes Bret Hart quite a while to defeat the fake Razor. And I kind of feel like Bret Hart should have been able to make quite short work of this.
Isn't Razor supposed to still be kind of like a big dude, though?
I mean, he's you know, mid-level at best. He's not like... I mean, he's not really much, you know? Like... Just the idea that last week he was like, you know, killing Steve Austin with a sharpshooter, and he was battering Vader, and he was, there was a lot of fire, and now it was like, just him having to deal with fake Razor for a while.
But it seems like in Vince's mind, and in the way that they're promoting Razor and Diesel, it still seems like they want Razor and Diesel to be credible opponents.
Oh, they do. I think my problem is I don't think they are. I think that's my issue. Is that I think Bret took such a step up last week that this week was just kind of a step back to, oh, it's just Bret Hart again. You know, he was just wrestling this. Because, like, the whole idea of last week is it was all very realistic, you know. He's angry at Steve, screwed, and blah, blah, blah. And now he's being put in the ring with one of the gimmicks. And it's quite jarring, in a way, I think.
I guess I see the story that they want to tell, though. Because if they present Razor Ramon as this big, you know, brute power guy, right? A guy who's
very large.
Well, not necessarily. I think he's fine. He's there. But I understand the purpose that he's serving, right? I mean, he's kind of like Kane nowadays, actually, which is interesting.
Oh, God. What an insult to Kane.
Well,
and what's ironic is that he's tagging with Kane here. So.
Well, I know. But the point that I'm trying to make is that they use Kane as this, like, big power guy. Like, Kane is not much of anything nowadays, right? But he's still freaking beats Luke Harper because they want him to remain credible for some reason, even though it's just Kane. But to keep him credible, they make him look like a bigger deal than any of us really think that he is, right? To keep Razor Ramon and Diesel credible, they're probably going to beat people or have an easier time not beating people. What am I trying to say? Bret Hart is going to have a harder time beating Razor Ramon than we think he should have beating Razor Ramon. But it's kind of good to illustrate the story of, like, you know, the smaller guy up against the big power guy, right? Like, he wasn't able to defeat Psycho Sid with his technical wrestling ability and his, you know, being one of the best wrestlers in the world, but he could chop down Razor Ramon, who's also super big and powerful and whatnot, which is how they want us to see Razor Ramon, even if we don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah, I get. I mean, that's an argument. That is an argument that you've put forward. And the thing is, I mean, in 1996, I did not feel that way. You know, in 1996, I was just, oh, it's Bret Hart and Razor Ramon. You know, because I was watching it as an 11-year-old kid. It's completely different to being a man with feelings and things to say.
So, as an 11-year-old kid, did you think, oh, I don't think Razor Ramon's high enough on the card for this match?
No, I just thought I want Bret Hart to put the sharpshooter on him.
Yeah, and he did, though. Like, I mean, yeah, the thing is, it's not like Razor Ramon beat Bret Hart here.
I mean, I'm merely mentioning this in passing. This is not like a James Ellsworth situation.
Oh, gosh.
It's not something where I'm, like, actively angry.
There's a guy who comes into my work who's always like, I just want to hear Kenny bitch about James Ellsworth. He came in yesterday and was like, I wanted Ellsworth to beat AJ just so I could hear Kenny bitch about it.
Well, something tells me that I'll be able to bitch about him doing something else in SmackDown soon, I can probably imagine. But Bret Hart does win with the sharpshooter, you are right. And he kind of keeps on for a little while, keeping that kind of new attitude he's got, but he doesn't give a fuck about anything. But then, you know, it can't be Monday Night Raw, Sandra, without a bit of Shawn Michaels being a dick.
What even, Shawn Michaels? Why are you even here? He's sitting there, he's like, he's not doing the proper watching the TV from an angle. First of all, like, I thought that all wrestlers were contractually obligated to watch TV at the most uncomfortable angle possible so that we can see both the wrestler and the television. No. Shawn Michaels just sitting there in a folding chair backstage, feet up on the counter, like hunched over watching this TV like he's on a timeout or something. Like, he's been placed on timeout and been told, no, you must watch Raw.
Yeah, no, it's. He is the worst babyface of all time.
How is he still a babyface here? How?
I mean, like, I can't answer that question because I, at this point especially, I was a Bret Hart guy, without question. You know, I was a Bret Hart guy, but Shawn was there, you know? He was just there.
I just don't understand because Vince goes backstage to talk to Shawn Michaels. And he's like, hey, Shawn. And Shawn looks up like, you are interrupting my timeout that I do not want to be on. But I also don't want to hear your voice because you're the reason I'm here. He just looks angry. He looks angry at the whole situation. And so Vince asks something about Bret Hart's victory. And he's like, you asked me that like I didn't think it was going to happen. What do you want from me? What I want from you is to answer the question and be a professional human being. That's what I want from you. But no. And then every question Vince asks him, he's just like, yeah. 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 Like, he is a petulant child throwing a tantrum.
He is. There's no defense for him. But overall, I guess, what did you think of this week's Monday Night Raw? Where was your thumb and overall thoughts?
I'll say thumbs up on this week's Monday Night Raw. I mean, how can I thumbs down a special in-ring interview from Psycho Sid? I mean, I don't know. Now, as I'm looking back through my notes, maybe I'm going to say thumbs in the middle. Because the Goldust stuff really makes me upset. And a lot of the stuff was just kind of like, eh, it was there.
My thumbs were up. I thought that the stories were all advanced pretty well.
So. I was entertained the whole time, so I'm conflicted. But
we do next week on Monday Night Raw. I just want to tease you guys what we're going to get. We are going to get a big tag team match next week with Bret the Hitman Hart teaming with Savio Vega to take on Farouk and Stone Cold Steve Austin on Raw next week. We're also going to have Hunter Hearst Helmsley in action, and there'll be more shenanigans. We do also have an in-ring segment with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels, which I'm very intrigued to see Sandra watch, because I can only imagine how much she is going to hate Shawn Michaels.
Oh, no.
But that has been it. We will be back next week for the last episode of the Retro Raw Rundown for 1996. This has been three months since we started this show, and I didn't think it was going to take off like it has. I don't think as many people were going to listen to it as you do. And people seem to now have a place to go back and start watching old Raws and old stuff. So happy days. So thanks for coming along with us on the ride, and go on Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes, to hear our pay-per-view reviews that go along with it. And also our interview with Jim Cornette, where we talk about the Survivor Series with him as well.
And soon up, I think that we can post those Ahmed Johnson interviews again.
Yes, we can.
Those will be coming in very soon days. I just can't talk. It's early in the morning for me.
That's fine. The one thing I'm annoyed about is that, the one thing I want to say is, like, Sandra, there's so much that you can have in 1997, but the one thing that I can't wait for you to see in 1997, and I'm just going to leave you with this and say no more about it. In 1997, you're going to get to see in action Mini Vader.
Oh, gosh, I've heard of this.
It's going to be so good.
Oh, man, I'm sure I'm going to have all sorts of thoughts about that.
Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985, and patreon.com/insidetheropes for all that bonus content Kenny was playing up so wonderfully.
Aw, thanks. Have a brilliant Christmas, everybody. This is the last time we're going to be here before the weekend. Have a good time. If not, just go out and get drunk. Do something. Have a nice time off. Enjoy your chill time. And if you're working, try to not spit in people's food or punch them if you can help it. Or if they're a dick to you, just
sometimes.
Do it anyway.
Well, sometimes these things have to be done. But yes, Merry Christmas, sometime, everyone.
And I think the only thing to leave you with is, remember, when you're sitting looking at your tree and all that sort of stuff, there's only one thing to remember, and that is that Psycho Sid is coming to town. You better watch out. You better start to cry. Better not shout, I'm telling you.